Our conversation from BAE Systems.
Hello and welcome to Our Conversation, the podcast for BAE Systems colleagues around the world. I'm Tim Smith, and on this edition, we pay a visit to DSEI. We've got news of a brand new acquisition, we have questions from you, and we'll announce the winners of last month's competition. As always, I'm joined by Charles Woodburn, Chief Executive of BAE Systems. Charles, good to see you. Welcome once again to the podcast.
And you, Tim. Great to be here again.
You're looking relaxed, you're looking fit and fresh. I trust you've had a good summer.
Excellent summer, yeah. Had a nice time with the family.
Great.
Very
well,
enjoyable.
Let's start then by talking about the business. I know you've been on the road talking to investors recently about the half-year results. We mentioned this on the last podcast. How's that gone, Charles?
Yes, you're right. We had a couple of weeks with investors, but also combined in that is DSEI, which we'll come on to shortly. And I'd characterise the mood of the investors as being slightly more upbeat. The way I've sort of pitched it is, compared to the first half of last year, that their operational performance is improving. And the fact that in the first half of this year, we've been able to hold plan on a number of the more troubling programs, I think our shareholders found that reassuring, and that the operational improvement that we've spoken about, remembering its operational excellence, competitiveness and technology, that that operational focus is starting to yield results. You don't fix it in a year. I mean, it takes several years of improvement. And what shareholders would like to see us do is keep doing that. I mean, keep showing that we can, ramp these programs, that we can grow, translate that order backlog into earnings growth consistently and predictably, and keep our customers happy.
You've also had a recent announcement concerning Finance Director Pete Lynas, no stranger, of course, to this podcast. He's going to be very familiar to our listeners, but he's to retire from the business next year.
He is. Pete has done over 35 years with the company. He's made a huge contribution in the time. And, I speak on a personal level, me coming in as COO and then CEO, Pete's been hugely supportive. And I've seen him with my own eyes just what a massive contribution he's made to the business. So, he'll be missed. He's retiring at the end of March next year. So we'll do our best here, Tim, the two of us, to get him on the show one more time. We're very pleased to say that Brad Grieve has joined the group as the Group Finance Director Designate. Brad brings over 30 years experience in the finance world, and is already getting around the business. He started, in fact, his first week was on the Investor Roadshow with us, and it was quite good that he went straight into that and heard immediately how our shareholders view us. But now he's going to spend the next several months really deep dive in the business, understand the business, spend time with Pete, get as much as he can. But we have got that good period of handover, and also, Pete has a very good team. So, Brad is in the fortunate position of inheriting that very good team too. So delighted to have Brad on board. We'll be sorry to see Pete go, but, after 35 years, he certainly deserves excellent retirement ahead of him.
Okay, moving on. You mentioned DSEI, and I know that you recently attended it, as you said. It's the Defence and Security Equipment International Exhibition in London. Very important event. We did a podcast from there, didn't we, a couple of years ago. How important is it? How important is BAE Systems' presence at an event like that?
It's a very valuable opportunity for us as a company, and then personally, to engage with customers, prospective customers, and indeed some of our investors there. I certainly took great pleasure in showing some of our UK customers, who don't always see the breadth of the business, some of the work that we do in the US, for example, and to be able to take some of those UK customers around and just see what we do and understand a bit more of the breadth of the business. It makes me very proud to be able to do that. And at the same time, when we have shareholders who we can bring and show them a little bit more about what we do. I mean, the physical products that we do meet our people, and I can tell you it means an awful lot to our shareholders to see just the skill and the capability and the enthusiasm that our people have on the stand showing their capabilities.
Okay, for the moment, Charles, thank you. Coming up then, next we'll find out more about DSEI.
Our conversation.
So, as we were saying, BAE Systems was exhibiting at DSEI, and our reporter Lynn Parsons was there to take a look around.
I'm here on the BAE Systems stand. It is incredibly impressive. Some extraordinary technologies are on show. Here's Nigel Whitehead, Chief Technology Officer for BAE Systems.
Well, since we're doing this on a podcast, the listeners can't actually see that I'm drooling. the stand here is absolutely bristling with brilliant things. The mission planning system we have, Sceptre, that is a terrific system. Our augmented reality and virtual reality systems that we have on display are streets ahead of what we had even last year. And last year we were out in front, and we also translate that same technology into the modern cockpit, and I know that our competitors are somewhat envious of that.
My name's Jean Page and I'm the principal technologist in Air Sector.
Tell me what you're doing here.
I'm here demonstrating the virtual cockpit, which is a concept we're looking at for future aircraft. Essentially it's a software reconfigurable cockpit, minimized the hardware, so it's very upgradable, much more affordable than current cockpits, but extremely flexible.
Hi Lynn, my name's James Ritchie. I'm part of the manufacturing technology team based in the Air Sector at Samlesbury and Warton.
In layman's terms, tell me about the factory of the future.
Okay, so this demo here is using collaborative robots to demonstrate the use of artificial intelligence, machine learning, to assemble a product without being programmed on how to assemble that product.
My name is Tony Mitchell. I'm the Director of Business Development for Fast Labs. We're here today with a new acquisition that we brought on board this year, Riptide, and it's a small underwater unmanned vehicle. It has batteries. It's an autonomous system, so we can send it off to do missions. Part of the reason BAE Systems was interested is we have a lot of sensors, but now we have a platform with which we can put sensors to go do some exploration. So it's still very research-focused right now, but we hope to transition that to a product.
Here's Dave Short, Group Technology Director.
Every time you come to one of these shows and you actually have a look around, you can see the rate at which technology is progressing. If you actually look at the backdrop of the threat environment, there's certainly a lot of investment from potential adversaries, and so we need to keep one step ahead of all that. We need to invest appropriately and ensure that we have products that our customers can use that keep us in that competitive arena.
From the XL in London, it's back to the studio.
Lynn Parsons reporting for us there. Charles, from the business's point of view, how did you rate the event this time?
Well, it's definitely a success. We had lots of visitors on the stand, lots of interest in our work. I mean, across the days of the show, we had over 1,000 customer and meetings on the stand. We had 40 country delegations come to see our work. So, it was just a great showcase for our technological capabilities and our people. And, you know, really demonstrated how we're constantly evolving our products. And I think one of the things we did really well this time was show the sort of interplay between products and information. And I think that was, certainly had a few people comment on that, that it was, you know, more than just widgets. I mean, great widgets, but the interplay between the products, joining them together with some, you know, very sophisticated software and create a sort of a picture. That came across very strongly. And I think I just want to say that it's a really strong collaborative effort from across the group. I was just reflecting earlier that, you know, a show like that, I mean, it's great for customers, great for shareholders, but just for the people that come, our people that come in the discussions that happen, it's hard to put a value on some of these, but I'm, you know, convinced that in terms of driving collaboration across the business, that a show like that, where you've got all people from across the business coming together with sort of a common cause of put on the best display that we can for potential customers, you know, really does improve collaboration across the business.
Now, I also hear there were some major announcements made at the show, including another addition to Team Tempest. Talk us through that one, Charles.
We had the announcement that that Italy will be joining Team Tempest, that the new combat air strategy that the UK is now it's got well underway. We announced at RIAT, in fact, that Sweden and Saab would be joining the program. And just at DSEI, we announced that Italy with Leonardo would be joining the program.
How significant is that?
Very significant. So now it's three strong partners in that. There's conversations ongoing with a couple more potential partners, but it certainly means that I think we're off to a very strong start with the future combat air strategy.
And finally, you also announced, I know, an agreement on a brand new acquisition. Tell us a little bit about that. We're going to hear more in just a moment.
Yes, indeed, Tim. We're very pleased to announce that we've signed an agreement to acquire Prismatic Limited, which is a very exciting deal for the business. It's part of what I've spoken about before, these bolt-on acquisitions, where we could do technology bolt-ons. We did Riptide earlier in the year, and now with Prismatic, it's a very exciting piece of technology, and we're delighted to welcome Prismatic into the group.
Okay, sounds exciting, sounds fascinating. We'll be talking more about that with Prismatic next. Well, as Charles just mentioned, BAE Systems have reached an agreement to acquire the British company Prismatic Limited. On the line to tell us more is the founder and CEO of the business, Paul Brooks. Paul, hello, welcome to our podcast.
Hi there, Tim.
Now, first of all, tell us a bit about your company.
Well, Prismatic is a small, medium enterprise based in Hampshire in the UK, and we specialise in designing and developing novel aerospace and space systems up to the prototype stage. So primarily that's UAVs, but we also have experience in small satellites.
And what sort of technology are we talking about? What technology does your work involve?
Well, our core technologies are really making things lightweight and efficient. So on the structural side, that rotates around carbon fibre composites and novel designs with those. And on the system side, it's sort of space-qualified electronics and high-efficiency electrical propulsion and power systems.
Paul, tell us a bit more about the Phaser 35.
The Phaser 35 is a solar-powered, high-altitude, long-endurance, unmanned aerial vehicle, sometimes called a high-altitude pseudo-satellite. So it's a very large, 35-metre wingspan aircraft, but extremely light. Without its batteries, it weighs 80 kilograms for an aircraft the size of a 737. And with that very light structure and a very efficient propulsion system that we've developed, it enables the aircraft to fly above the jet stream winds and above the clouds and effectively remain located above one location at the Earth for up to a year at any one time.
And what's it been like working with BAE Systems?
Well, it's been great. As a small company, it's always been difficult trying to work with large companies with their different processes and approaches. But from the very outset, BAE has been very clear that they wanted us to continue in the way that we work with our sort of fast and agile pace. And even better with BAE is that they stuck to that position. You know, we obviously have some discussions about how things need to be done, but all along the line, BAE from the top management down has been consistent that they want us to continue in the way that we are working, and we'll find a way to make that fit with the large company.
And with that extra investment and strength, Paul, from BAE Systems, what does that mean to your business now?
That's been outstanding. I mean, the first point is the huge vote of confidence is given all the staff here, and that BAE, as such a large and significant company, has not only recognised the value in the products we've now delivered to them, but have extended that confidence in us by looking to do new work under a longer-term framework agreement. So I think that confidence gives the staff and, of course, the security of the work that we continue to do what we're really good at.
And with that confidence and security, what are the next steps? Possibly a difficult question, but the next steps and the milestones for Prismatic, what are they?
Oh, I think the first next step is actually a very easy question. You know, we've delivered the aircraft. We need to go and fly the Phaser 35 at high altitude. So we're working very closely now with the flight operations team at BAE at Wharton to get those aircraft fully prepared, ship them out to the flight site and demonstrate how good they really are.
Sounds very exciting to me. Charles, let me bring you into this discussion. We've heard what the investment brings to Prismatic. Clearly very excited by that. What does this acquisition bring to the BAE Systems portfolio?
Well, I think as Paul has just said, we've already achieved a lot together in a short period of time. I think it's fair to say that you know, the team is working at great pace in a rapidly developing field. We see huge opportunities for their technology. And basically, we're just very excited to see what we can achieve together.
OK, Charles, thank you for that comment. And Paul Brooks, CEO of Prismatic Limited, thank you very much indeed for joining us on this podcast and good luck for the future.
Many thanks.
Charles, thank you for those comments. Sit tight. Coming up next, we have colleague questions for you.
Our conversation.
Now, every month, we, of course, put Charles in the hot seat to answer questions from you. On the line is Carlos Bautista, who's a competitive intelligence associate in maritime services. Carlos, hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Charles.
Hey, Carlos.
Thank you very much for joining us. You're through, as you can hear, to Charles. What's your question, please?
Yeah, so I had a question about the Type 31E program. Following the news that we weren't selected as the preferred bidder for the program, I was just wondering whether there's still intention to use our Leander design to pursue future opportunities in international markets?
Well, thanks for the question, Carlos. It's a very good question. I think the first thing to say is that we have a long-term commitment to shipbuilding in the UK. The Type 26 program will see us with continued production in Glasgow well into the 2030s. And as you know, we're absolutely committed to delivering these next generation warships that increase the Royal Navy's ability to defend our interests at home and abroad. And, you know, frankly, recent events have really underpinned the need for that. In relation to Type 31E, You know, we believe that we submitted a technically strong, very credible and realistic bid based on a proven and, in our view, very exportable design. That being the Leander design, which, as you know, was the basis for our bid. It's a very compelling proposition for export, and we did a lot of consideration for that and made sure that, in our view, it did hit the sweet spot for a lower cost frigate design for the export markets. And we know that there is a fair bit of interest from overseas navies, but in the light of the UK decision, it's only right that we take stock, have a look, consider what we do with the Leander class design. And at this stage, it's frankly too early for us to speculate, but we will be having a very good look at that. It's worth reflecting that our global combat ship, the Type 26 design, you combine that export success into Australia and then the design into Canada, plus the OPVs or the offshore patrol vessels that we sold overseas in places like Brazil and Thailand. We already have two, export successes, and certainly in the case of the Type 26, I would argue one of, the greatest naval export successes in a generation. So it's fair to say that the export of our maritime platforms remains very high on the agenda, and we'll be thinking very carefully about the next steps with the Leander design.
Okay, Carlos, thank you very much indeed for your question. Does that answer it, by the way?
Yes, it does. Thanks for the answer. That was really useful to know.
That's Carlos Bautista, who's a competitive intelligence associate in maritime services. Right, coming up next is Hebe Wright, who's a project management undergraduate from Naval Ships. Hebe, welcome to the podcast. You're through to Charles. What's your question, please?
Hello. So my question is, what is your thoughts regarding employee retention, given the changing operating environment? Do we need to retain people to retain skills, or is it a changing workforce essential to maintaining the level of innovation we need to stay competitive in the future?
Well, it's a very good question, Hebe. We have a big focus, as you know, from the executive committee down through the functions and all the lines of business on strategic workforce planning and making sure that that is part of the business planning process, the IBP process that we run through the business. And that means looking ahead, understanding and planning for skills and capabilities that we need now, to deliver the sort of the immediate programs, but also in 5, 10 or 20 years' time. And there are critical skills that we need to acquire and develop, but also the legacy knowledge that we need to maintain and transfer effectively to the new people coming in. So I would say it's a balance. We've got to keep our talented people. We've got to both recognize and reward the people so that they, see that they have a long-term future within the business and hopefully stay with us and flourish in their careers through the business. Knowledge sharing and knowledge transfer is absolutely key. And I think as the so-called knowledge economy, it's becoming more and more important, not just that you develop your own skills, but how you pass those on and work with others and collaborate across the organization. And on top of that, we've got to make sure that we create an inclusive environment where everybody, everyone's voices and ideas are heard and people, feel comfortable to be themselves. We certainly don't want to be shutting off, any potential pools of talent across the population, which, really does bring the inclusive nature of the environment to the fore. And finally, I would just say that innovation is, in my view, just as likely to come from people who've been in the business a long time because they've seen a lot. They sort of, understand things that have worked and things that don't work with the people who are fresh into the business. So I would say that innovation, it's the combination sometimes of that experience with sort of young people, the questioning of why things are where they are, is often where the sort of sparks of innovation can really happen. And it just comes back on, it's a balance. You need a balance of experience, knowledge and fresh thinking.
Thank you, Charles. Yeah, that was a very comprehensive answer.
All right, Hebe, thank you very much indeed for that question. Charles, thank you for the answer. That's Hebe Wright, who's a project management undergraduate from Naval Ships. Thanks for joining us on the podcast and good luck for the future.
Thank you, Hebe.
Thank you, guys.
If you'd like to pose a question on a future podcast, just drop us a line to ourconversation@baesystems.com. That's ourconversation@baesystems.com. Now, last month, we had a competition, you may remember, to win one of three superb Garmin sports watches. We were talking to Invictus UK competitor Russell Hunt and asked you the question, in which event did Russell win a gold medal at the Invictus UK trials? The answer was contained within our chat with Russell, so let's have a listen to him speaking with us on the podcast last month.
two medals from last week, a gold medal in a wheelchair rugby and a bronze medal in cycling.
So the answer was wheelchair rugby. Thank you to Russell for that, Russell Hunt. Charles, I think you have our three winners. Perhaps you'd like to tell us who they are.
I do. We have three winners, as you said. Mark Leek from Electronic Systems UK, based at RAF Coningsby. Daniel Topping from Land UK at Radway Green. And Andrew Elwell from Maritime Services at Broad Oak. So congratulations to you all.
Absolutely. Congratulations to them. They all spotted that the answer was wheelchair rugby. Now, before we end our podcast, Charles, what have you got coming up in the foreseeable future that you can tell us about?
Yes, well, it never stops. A very busy round of chief executive business reviews coming up to make sure that we're on track for year end and positioned well for next year. And very much looking forward to visiting Australia in October.
And of course, we'll catch up with all that and more on our next podcast. That's it, though, for this edition of Our Conversation. We're back next month with more news and features from around the BAE Systems community. But for now, from me, Tim Smith, and Charles Woodburn, it's goodbye.
Our Conversation, back next month.